This is Mike, and you're listening to the Prop History Podcast.
Picture a universe where there are no movie props. They're just movies with words. Maybe not even pictures.
Why? Because props are make movies cool, dang it.
This is Mike, and you're listening to the Prop History Podcast.
And I'm Greg Nowling.
And we're going to talk to you about movies, their props, who made them, where they are today, and we'll probably ramble on about a bunch of nonsense in between.
Yeah, because we do those kind of things.
Yeah, we do that. I think also in your intro, Greg, you were talking about books.
Was I?
They just become books at that point, don't they?
Yeah, you know, that's true.
It's movies without props and just words is books.
But even books have props in them.
Sometimes, but they talk about them. They don't actually build them.
One of these days we'll do a Ready Player One. And like if from the book, I have collected almost all of the props that were listed in the book.
If we did the movie, it would take us the rest of our lives because there are so many things depicted in that movie.
But Pee-wee's bike's in it. I already have that.
There's a lot of stuff in there. Akira's bike, of course, the DeLorean, which is kind of a good tie-in here.
Yeah, because we're going to talk about Back to the Future.
Yeah, we are going to talk about 1985's Back to the Future today.
Damn it, Marty!
Damn! So... As we just stated, this episode is, of course, about the 1985 film Back to the Future, directed by Robert Zemeckis and starring, of course, Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, Crispin Glover, and Thomas F. Wilson.
I've met all of those people except Robert Zemeckis.
Really?
Yeah. Crispin Glover is one weird dude.
So there was a book that he put out. Apparently, he only does regular movies to pay for his artistic ventures.
Right. Which I saw one of those.
It was weird as hell. It was an old 1800s manual about rat catching that he just cut out chapters and put in his own stuff.
That is weird.
And it was very, very strange.
I saw a movie called something like It's All Right, Everything's Okay or something weird like that. And it was about this guy who had cerebral palsy and he would have sex with women and kill them. That's Crispin Glover in a nutshell.
That's depressing.
It was weird as fuck.
Oh my goodness.
Saw it at the art museum here in Indianapolis and got to meet him afterwards.
That's cool that you got to meet him, but he does seem like in every interview I've ever seen, which are very few and far between, he does seem a bit different.
My understanding is that the reason that his character in Charlie's Angels didn't say anything was because he didn't like the script, and he's like, I'm just not going to say anything. I'm just going to scream or whatever.
Just have no actual lines whatsoever.
Yeah. And so...
Fair enough.
Yeah. Weird dude.
So, have you ever owned any of the actual props from 1985's Back to the Future?
Screen use?
Yes. No. They are quite spendy if they do come up for sale.
Yeah, the closest I've ever owned... So... Actually, this is kind of the genesis of my prop collecting, building, making was when the movie came out, I was obsessed. I've probably seen Back to the Future, I'm going to say, at least 300 times.
Fair.
And the one prop that I really, 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 really wanted to own was the comic book that the kid carries out to the bar. And he's like, look, Dad, it's Martians. And so I would sit there in front of the television with that paused, drawing it over and over
to try and get it right.
Yeah. And so when I was 15 or 16, I remember finding out there was a guy, Kurt Metzler. I don't know, or Metz or Metzler. I think Metzler. He was a comic book artist that lived here in town. And I paid him like $100. I put money on his Comic Carnival account at the comic book store to draw a replica of that cover for me. And like it was good, but I was disappointed because it wasn't right. And so I became obsessed kind of with this prop. And over the years, like, people would be like, oh, I found a copy for you. And it'd be like, oh, this isn't right. So finally one day I was watching the movie and realized that Andy Probert had done the artwork, and I tracked him down and emailed him. I'm like, is there any way I could get a copy of the artwork for the comic book? And he's like, yeah, how big do you want? And I've got, it's, I don't know, probably huge, like bigger than 11 by 17.
Yeah, I've seen it there in your where your pool table's at, in that same room, yeah.
Copy of the original artwork directly from Andy Probert, and he signed it and everything.
Oh, that's super cool.
And so then I took it and scanned it in and made an actual working comic book out of it. So
that's the closest you have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that artwork is, 100%.
And if you could have any one prop from Back to the Future, there's a lot of them.
Man. The one that, I want to say the DeLorean, but the one that I've been obsessed with my entire life has probably been the skateboard.
Yeah.
The Volterra. I've just been in love with that.
Is that model? Is that specific model? Is it hard to find? Is it a rare model?
Or? It's hard to find now because it's
sought after. Yeah,
40-year-old, skateboard. But they've re-released it a handful of times, like two or three times. And I was just looking on eBay when we were doing research for this, and I found a new old stock one for like $1,300.
Oh, that's not much.
And and then 2 years ago they re-released them and they were like $300 and now they're $500.
Yeah,
so
the collector market kicks them back up. I know that I mention them almost every podcast. They should sponsor us. Prop Store just had their big spring autumn collection, their premier auction, and there were a couple of Back to the Future and Back to the Future 2 items in that. And they went for astronomical amounts of money, as is tradition with anything for Back to the Future.
Yeah, it's a movie that just grabbed a hold of an entire generation of people and just did not let go.
It was a bit of a cultural phenomenon, and spawned two sequels that were equally as good.
Yeah.
As the first one, which is rare, and they're all very watchable, which is strange because you figure by the time they get to the third one, they're just kind of grasping at straws, but they actually tied that story up really well.
Yeah, the first and the second one are by far my favorites.
Yeah, the third one is a bit iffy, but...
But, you get to watch, what's her name? The chick that plays Clara.
I know who you're talking about. I don't remember her name.
Mary Steenburgen.
And I don't have that pulled up right now.
Mary Steenburgen, yeah.
Oh, dear. What is happening? Is that your phone?
That's my phone.
What have you done, Greg?
Turn this. Everything's on mute.
It's supposed to be on mute.
I'm supposed to see. It's a.
Have you never done a podcast?
Well, here's the problem: is that we're recording today is Dr. Martin Luther King Day.
It is.
So as a teacher, I don't have to teach today, but my phone doesn't know that.
Right.
That I'm on holiday.
So it's telling you what your schedule is.
Yeah. It's saying, "Hey, it's 12:30. Go to lunch."
And we are actually recording in my shop this time because apparently we swap out every time. But I do like that Robert Zemeckis and other creators of Back to the Future have stated unequivocally that while they are alive, they will never reboot that series.
Yeah, I just don't know where you would go with it. Like, I mean, yes, you could go 1,000 places. Let me take that back. It would just not be perfect. Like, it was kind of a perfect movie.
It was perfect in the moment it was made.
Yeah.
And I feel like any attempt to remake it would sort of fall flat.
Right.
So I'm glad that they don't carry on with that.
Yeah, like, so this last week I actually taught this as one of my classes. I'm doing a class on Ready Player One, and we're watching a lot of movies, and this was pretty heavily influenced in Ready Player One, and we're teaching virtually, and so I'm playing this on Netflix or Amazon or whatever, and I play it with the captions on, and I've picked up a couple of things watching with the captions that I hadn't noticed before, but I'm really just taken aback by how okay it is. You watch movies from the 80s often and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they said that.
It's a bit problematic as you watch it later on.
Right.
Because we become more aware of
things
that are not acceptable anymore, et cetera.
The only thing that I think is said in the whole movie is the whole scene where they're getting ready to throw Marty into the back of the car at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance, and they call the band members a derogatory name that we use towards black people in the 50s, I guess, that no one ever really uses. It's interesting that of all the places they could go, they picked that word, which is probably relatively innocuous today, and you don't look at it and you're like, oh crap, I wish they hadn't used that word.
Yeah. Because it doesn't completely negate the whole the whole film, which is nice. And there is like the sort of hinted at incestuous scene ish where she kisses her son.
Right. But even then she's like, it's like kissing my brother.
Yeah. Which I know a lot of people have overanalyzed, like, how does she know what that's like? No, it just feels like she's kissing a member of her family, sure, kind of thing. Yeah. But we digress.
Right.
Because we're talking about props a lot. My favorite prop from that film, of course, is sort of the MacGuffin of that film, the flux capacitor, which, of course, is a direct tie-in to the DMC DeLorean that they used to make that.
1921 DMC 12, designed by John DeLorean.
Yeah, and
cocaine.
Right? It was funded by Coke. If I recall, that car was actually the time machine was supposed to be a flying machine.
No, it was originally going to be a refrigerator.
Was it a refrigerator?
Yeah, and the reason they didn't do a refrigerator was because they didn't want kids playing in refrigerators and dying.
Ah, that makes sense. So instead they'd have them play in DeLoreans.
Well, you know, and the stainless steel constructions makes time strike, you know.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier. But that that completely angled engine that the DMC 12 had was pretty dreadful, because its engine is actually 90 degrees out.
And, I didn't know that. I know
power
that
transfer was a pain in the ass.
Volvo made engines for that car for a while.
Yeah, and now I believe for a while back there was a company that was going to try and revitalize the DeLorean and bring back the design.
There is the DeLorean Motor Company in Texas.
Yeah,
so they're rebuilding them.
I think they restore them, and then they had a concept for a brand new one at some point.
But they're also using NOS parts to build new DeLoreans,
which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
that they built enough parts that they could build more cars from those parts is pretty awesome.
You know what? I should go. My wife and I travel a lot, and we've been to Belfast in Ireland, but it never occurred to me that I should try to track down the DeLorean company or the manufacturing plant.
Oh, like Belfast. where it still is, or if it still exists.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something there.
Yeah, someone's probably bought it up, because I know like BMW and Volkswagen bought up a bunch of those car companies in England, like when British Leyland fell apart and TVR and all that. But TVR is back, as it turns out.
Oh, good.
Bought by a Russian company, as I understand. But this is not what this podcast is about. This is pretty typical for us, though.
So tell me about your love for the flux capacitor.
So I always loved the idea behind the flux. From the first time I saw the movie, I think I was probably 8 or 9 years old, I always thought the idea behind the flux capacitor was super cool. Of course, it's all described with bullshit science that was just made up for the movie. Sure. But I loved the look of it. And then when I got older and started caring about props and looking into it, it's really just neon tube and some capacitors. That's what it's built from. But you take that as a whole with the whole concept of the time machine car and all of its various dials and readouts and all the detail that they added into it. I love that prop for what it is. And I don't... Do you know what happened to the original? Because I know they built several for the movie, but...
No, but I do know that there is a documentary they just did on saving the DeLorean.
Yeah, so, like the original for the movie? So it does still exist then.
I think so, yeah. So
there's actually another interesting car in Back to the Future 2. This is a bit of a sideline again, because it's what we do, but it's actually Centauri's car from the last Starfighter. Yeah, and the only reason I bring that up is because an article popped up on Yahoo, of all places, that car's been found, and it's being restored. Cool. So the original, whatever, Centauri's car, it's being restored.
I want to say that the car that they used, the Banshee that they used for the Knight Rider 2000 movie, was also in Back to the Future 2.
Yeah, and it actually is up for sale now, too.
Yeah,
If you spend enough money, the Hoff will deliver
it
to you.
No, that's a different Knight Rider car.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
that's disappointing.
It's an actual kit. And I was talking to... So, I don't know if you know this. I actually built a full-functioning kit from Knight Rider years ago.
Of course you did.
So, I still have a number of friends in the community. Apparently, that was possibly a touring car used in Europe that Hoff bought, and then they put it together with eBay parts. And no way. It's up to like $500,000.
Right, because it's the Hoff. I mean, that's why people are paying that much money, not for the car.
But the Banshee was the red one used in the Knight Rider 2000 movie. It was Knight Industries 4000.
Oh, interesting. Oh, goodness.
It was the car, and it was red, and it was horribly ugly.
Yeah, and it's dreadful looking.
Yeah,
but it's hard to get that magic back, you know, from that era of car and trying to make a modern car look.
Although
like
I did like the new Knight Rider series that came out about 10 years ago where they used a Mustang. So that was kind of
I never
cool.
did see that. I remember seeing advertisements for it, but yeah. I never actually watched it. What other props from Back to the Future would you have?
So I actually have a number of replicas. Like, one of my favorite stories is years ago, I figured out that Claudia Wells owns a place called Armani Wells in Studio City, California. And Claudia played Marty's girlfriend in the first movie, before mm-hmm. replaced by Elizabeth Shue in the second and third. And so she owns this clothing shop that sells high-end used men's clothing. And I took in a stack of... I went to California, and I took with me a stack of Save the Clock Tower flyers. And I had her write, "I love you, 555, whatever the phone number was, on the back of like 7 or 8 of them. And I actually got one that looked really close to what was in the movie. And then, so I have that. The guitar that was used, which was a Gibson ES-345. There's a funny story for you. So that is a 1959 Gibson ES-345. That guitar did not exist in 1955.
Yeah.
So
there's a couple of anachronisms in that film.
Yeah.
That are like that. They use things that are just out of period. But
like Johnny B. Goode.
Like Johnny B. Goode. But most people don't know that anyway, so it's totally right. fine. It's the same era.
Well, and you know, for me, I mean, it furthered the story as far as, or, you know, that little side story where you see, you know, Marty playing essentially Chuck Berry's guitar, playing Chuck Berry's music, while Chuck Berry's cousin's listening and says, "You know that new sound you're looking for? Yeah. Listen to this."
Yeah.
You know, but
it's your cousin Marvin Berry. That's
so. I have a replica of this guitar, which you know, mm-hmm. and originally it started its life as a Epiphone Dot. Epiphone is the cheap end of Gibson.
Right.
And we went through and replaced everything on it to make it look identical to the movie, with the exception of the neck, because that Gibson neck is impossible to get. And so I've got that guitar signed by Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Tom Wilson, Leah Thompson, and Claudia Wells.
You're just missing Mr. Zemeckis, is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, I don't have him or... crazy dude, Crispin Glover.
Crazy, don't call him that.
No, I don't have.
He's just different. No. That's all.
I really respect Crispin Glover. So if you're listening, I think what you're doing is awesome. That you're, you know, doing your own thing. But
if Crispin Glover is one of the 12 people to listen to this podcast, I'd be shocked.
It could happen. But I understand that. Like, if you ask him for an autograph, like, he'll sign it. Like, if you like a Back to the Future, he'll sign it and then put something from his stuff. And
oh,
so
really?
It kind of terrifies me, like what if I got Crispin Glover, you know, found he was going to be somewhere, and I took my guitar and he put Crispin Glover, watch the other movie.
Yeah, watch this thing that I did. Yeah,
I think he's still kind of bitter about what happened to him with Back to the Future too.
Really?
So, do you not know that story?
No.
So Jeffrey Wiseman played the George character in the sequels. Crispin didn't want to do it. He thought he wanted to do it, but he wanted to do more, get more money, and he wanted to change some aspects of the script. And they said no. At least that's my understanding. If Crispin was here, I would happily let him tell the story and correct me on everything I'm saying that's wrong. And so they decided not to go with him, or he decided not to do it. And they basically put Jeffrey Wiseman in a mask that made him look like George. And Crispin sued. For doing that, because they're using his appearance to, and so
without actually paying him to be there, yeah. Did they credit him in the mm-mm. film at all?
No, Jeffrey Wiseman, I think, is the,
they just used his image-ish sort of face mask.
Well, they had him as the actor, and they just put a rubber mask over his head, I guess.
That's kind of well, fair. I mean, it's not the first time that's ever been done in a movie.
No, but, you know, I mean, and good on Crispin Glover for sticking up for it, you know, because, like, as, you know, artists, like, we've only got, you know, our art, right?
Yeah.
You know, if somebody starts taking it, then...
Yeah, as often happens, unfortunately, people tend to, I mean, I've had my stuff, people claim my work as their own, which is always awkward.
Right? Years ago, I made an R2-D2 kit for a guy, and he literally had like 5 gallons of rubber waiting on it.
Just to make copies of it, yeah. Which is why I'm sort of hesitant to sell certain things sometimes, because I don't want to go through the process of making it and then find out that somebody's recast it and then it's all over the place now. And
right.
It's not really the money aspect of it. It's that somebody's claiming my effort as their own.
I've been building props for 20 something years, and I just, you know, I've come to the conclusion that if you make it, somebody's going to recast it. And
yeah, you know, absolutely. So. Or they're going to use your image, like you post online, because you have no control over that once it gets out there. So it's just, it is what it is. So moving on, Back to the Future props.
So, you know, I have my list of things. Oh, you know, I really dig the clocks in Back to the Future. The Panasonic, RC, what is it? 6025? Is that the number?
That's, it's the RC6015.
15.
Yeah.
I've always kind of wanted that alarm clock. Actually, my mom had that alarm clock when I was a kid.
So. And there's also the Kit Kat clock.
And the poodle clock and the owl clock.
Like all that very stereotypical 1950s stuff.
And there is a Denver Broncos alarm clock, like with the bells in there somewhere. There is a Harold Lloyd clock floating around in there, where Harold Lloyd's hanging from the arm of the of the clock tower.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting homage.
That's kind of fun. So,
I've got the stairway going up my stairs, or this wall going up my stairs in the house, and I've always wanted to just load it up with a bunch of clocks. And
just would Becky be okay with that?
Yeah, no, I think as long as they were cool clocks, she'd be fine.
Yeah, she'd probably dig it. Yeah,
I think the fact that I would want them all to be 25 minutes fast would probably be the,
probably bother the hell out of her.
What the hell was that?
What is this nonsense?
My experiment worked.
It was George's bike too, right?
Yeah.
But it's a 1953 Schwinn, I believe.
Yeah, it's a Phantom, I believe.
Yeah, which is, I love that old style of bicycle too, but they weigh a ton.
They do. So I have a replica of Pee Wee Herman's bike, which is a 1949 Schwinn, and granted, it's, you know, kind of fully loaded, but yeah, it's...
Well, yours is exceptionally accurate too, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I was able to restore two screen-used bikes and work on another one, and we took a lot of measurements and a couple of molds, and yeah.
So you had the ability to make those hyper-accurate parts, which is awesome.
It's a horrible bike to ride.
I'll bet. It's probably way off balance, isn't it?
It's off balance and weighs like 1,500 pounds.
Right, because the original bike didn't weigh enough, so they had to add more to it.
Yeah, but I would love to have George's bike, although, like, the thing is, I always like these big props that take up so much damn space.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, I have always wanted to have the Emmett, I think it's Emmett T-114 aircraft tow tractor that they used to make the APC from Aliens.
Oh, wow.
Because it was an aircraft towing tractor that they had to remove 11 tons of lead ballast from before they modified it. Yes.
22,000 pounds?
Yeah.
I can't even fathom that. That's like... Like what, 5 pickup trucks?
More or less, yeah. And it's all just to have the mass balance against an aircraft when it's pulling a large aircraft.
Wow.
So that, you know, it can hold it in place. Because airplanes do sometimes fall on their tails.
Oops.
So if you get it moving down a runway and it's bumping along, or a taxiway or whatever, and that aircraft starts to bounce, it can't against the weight of the tractor. So
I just can't, like, what do they do, get in there with a blowtorch and just melt it out?
I don't know. Well, it's massive plates that they just unbolted and removed, and then they just put, I think it was aluminum and plywood covering on it, and there was a small space where the cargo door opens, where the, like, the personnel door opens, where the Marines come out of, that it could only put 2 people in at a time. So when you see them disembark, when they first assault the when they first land on the planet, there's only 2 actors in there at a time.
It's like a freaking clown car.
It is a clown car. So, and they're all with all of their props and their equipment on them. And I don't know that Drake or Vasquez ever went in there, because they had those big massive M56 smart weapons, with the big, you know, the cam arm on it. I don't know if they could even fit in there. But yeah, that's how they built that thing. It's from an old aircraft tow tractor.
Man, you're totally ruining movies for me.
That's what we do on this, don't we? Kind of the point, isn't it?
Right?
Like, to go and look at how these props were made and then how they were actually used.
Yeah, I always wondered, you know, speaking of the props from this movie, like the JVC camcorder that Doc uses and Marty ends
Marty uses,
back 1955. Like, I'm sure it's possible, but I'm just wondering, like, what wiring they had to do to connect that to a 1950s television. You know, like, but, you know, who knows? I guess it makes more sense than just sitting there. It's like, all right, Doc, look through the viewfinder right there.
Huh? Yeah. Well, there's so much, like, you know, bullshit science in movies. Yeah. They just sort of, like, accept that this is, you know, suspension of disbelief stuff. But, yeah, I from that same, like, scene when you first see that camcorder where the Libyans that show up and kill him?
I don't know they'll find me.
Yeah, pinball parts. I love that case that has the radioactive material in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's really just an equipment case that's used in film production and music production all over the place.
And that company, I think, sells that case in yellow now. Yeah. And with the radioactive stickers and stuff. Like,
and there's a lot of people that own them, of course, because they want them for that. But right. I've seen a couple of different productions where you look at back to the, you know, behind the scenes photos and they've got all their equipment cases are standing, and there's one with radioactive insignia on it. So there That's is awesome. That case all over the place, which is kind of fun.
It is interesting to me that, you know, here we are, this came out, what, 1985? Mm-hmm. And, you know, here we are 35, is that right? 35, 36 years later,
mm-hmm.
That companies are still kind of milking their little contributions to that movie. And I don't even know if milking is really the right word, because, you know, there's demand for it.
Like, yeah, they're just playing on nostalgia, and there's money there.
And
so,
if I had the money, I would probably buy one of those cases and put shit in it.
I absolutely would. There's a guy in, I believe he's in the Czech Republic, that is making hyper-accurate replicas of the plutonium rods, the fuel rods and stuff. And you could get a bunch of them and fill that case with it, and I think that would be hilarious.
I've thought about it. You know what, now, you know, I have a laser cutter. I don't know why I haven't done this, because it's a pretty easy prop to make, so I should totally.
I mean, I got a stack of acrylic rod over there in the corner that I could probably make it from, too.
Yeah.
But,
well, I mean the tube with the water.
Oh, yeah. The suspension fluid it's supposed to be in, or whatever it is. Yeah. No, it'd be fun. I've really not had a huge interest in collecting Back to the Future props until recently, so I don't own anything from that movie, nor replicas from that movie. But I've always loved, like, the Sports Almanac, and because that's kind of a MacGuffin through the first two movies. It follows through and is actually the reason that the second movie's issues take place. So, I don't know, do we want to touch on the second movie or make that a separate episode? Because there's so much we could still talk about with the first episode, and particularly the prop, the small prop, not large one, obviously, because the DeLorean's the biggest one in there. In a little wind-up car that he demonstrates.
Oh, yeah. On the model. He nearly sets the garage on.
I've always wanted that whole model the car.
I was watching it the other day, and it looked like the whole town was made out of foam core.
Yeah, and it was just mocked up. And I believe that was actually one of the planning models that they used to plan shots with, and they just put it into the scene.
Now, you know, that was all filmed on the Universal backlot, so like all of that stuff you see in the town square is used in like other 100
different movies. Yeah.
I want to say that there's an episode of Knight Rider that was filmed on that same square.
I believe Andy Griffith was filmed there as well. Like some scenes from Andy Griffith were filmed there. I found a list of all the different movies that have been on that particular set.
And, nice.
And of course, all they have to do is change camera angle and it looks like a new town. So it's been used everywhere where they need a middle America town.
Yeah.
Like, and there it is.
Boss Hogg's house from Dukes of Hazzard is with the Gilmore Girls house, I think. Right. Or it's one of the houses on
what
Gilmore
a lovely
Girls.
Connection that is.
Right? But yeah, so there's like 33 houses that we're using. I've never gone out to LA and tried to track down any of the filming locations, although they're all there.
Yeah.
There's a, you know, like where they film Marty's house or the Twin Pines Mall or the Lone Pine Mall, depending on what time of the day you get there.
Right.
So, or what time of history
you what get time there. You get there. Yeah. We can say that, and then that's accurate. What time you get there, it doesn't, you can apply it to years.
No. Damn.
The radiation suit that Marty wears Darth Vader from the planet Vulcan.
Yes. And playing the Eddie Van Halen music on his Walkman. And the hair dryer is his laser pistol kind of thing. Because
they've never seen any of that crap in 1955. Which,
well, you know, thankfully.
Hair dryers existed then, but they weren't. They were a bit bulkier at that point.
Well, I wonder if that would have been a 1950s hairdryer at the time, you know.
Yeah.
Because where else, unless Doc was planning on taking a hairdryer back.
Yeah, why is there a hair? Because he certainly didn't do much with his own hair. Why would he have a hairdryer? So it's probably from
the period. I would think so.
Yeah.
So
maybe it was his mom's.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Damn. I do have Doc's shoes. They reissued the Nikes, the orange Nikes that he wears in that opening scene.
Weren't Marty's shoes Michael J. Fox's own
shoes?
Yeah,
he just wore them on the set.
Like, wore whatever they were.
Yeah, and they're like, yeah, the Nike, I forget the name of them. I didn't write it down, but because the modern version is the Cortez. It's I don't know, the Bruins. I think that's what they were.
The Bruins?
The Nike Bruins.
Like the Boston Bruins?
Or like the Cal State Bruins or something like that.
Yeah, it's just named. I'm really curious why the NHL team, the Boston Bruins, named their team after that.
I don't know.
There's not a whole lot of Bruins in Boston.
No, I saw that the Cleveland Indians picked a new name to the Naps.
As did the former Washington Redskins. They're now just the Washington Football Team.
Well, that's not permanent, though, for my
right. No, they're still like trying to determine a name, but I'm glad that they're moving away from that.
Yeah, but Cleveland
stuff.
Is the Naps, which is named after Napoleon LaJoie, I think. He was a manager back in like 1908, and that's what they were called back then.
That's a cool callback, though. They went to the original name.
Yeah. Like, and you know, the other thing for me is that the Cleveland Browns are named after Paul Brown, who I think it was Paul Brown who owned the team.
Yeah.
And so to have both Cleveland teams named after people who were involved in the organization.
That's pretty cool. So I'm glad that they're moving away from that.
Now we just got to rename the Cavaliers after, you know, LeBron James or something.
I don't think Cleveland likes him much. Is he back with Cleveland?
I don't know where he is. He's been there. He left. He's been there. You know, it's hard to keep track.
See, this is all sports ball stuff that I don't really know a whole lot about.
I just read the news.
Yeah.
You know.
So. I pay attention to hockey a little bit. European football, and that's about it.
I like curling.
Curling is a cool sport.
Yeah.
It is. I will watch that during the Winter Olympics.
My wife complains that when we watch women's curling that they're not wearing bikinis or something. Like she, my wife's a little bit of a sexist pig.
It's the winter.
I know, but she's like, why am I watching this if they're not?
Yeah, I like, oh goodness. Yeah. this is just strayed far too far.
Back to the future.
That's a really terrible tie-in, but okay.
Yeah, no. This is what we do. We meander.
So we were talking about this before we recorded it. A little fun fact about Back to the Future is that Michael J. Fox, of course, plays the main character, Marty McFly. They actually filmed some scenes with a different actor because the original actor was, of course, supposed to be my man Stoltzy, Eric Stoltz.
So tell me about your fascination with Eric Stoltz.
So the first time I ever saw Eric Stoltz in a film was The Prophecy.
Okay.
Where he played the Archangel Michael. And he just, like, he came across as this sort of almost like scummy angel. And every character he's ever played that I had seen, like his character in Pulp Fiction, just kind of comes across as sort of this scummy dude. And I've just liked his depictions of his characters. I don't know why. He just, like, comes across as a bit off. And I've always liked him for that. I don't know why.
Wasn't he Rocky Dennis in Mask?
I believe he was, yeah.
Yeah.
So I hadn't thought about that in a while. Yeah. I just liked Eric Stoltz. I did. Huh. He hasn't been anything in a while that I remember.
Or he's been in a lot.
I just haven't been paying attention to it. But I'm sure I just always loved calling him my man Stoltzy because it just rolls off the tongue pretty easily, too. Well,
I'm sure he'll do a convention at some point. We'll just have to...
We'll have to go talk to him.
Yeah.
Go meet Stoltzy. And I'm going to have him sign stuff as Stoltzy.
I want to be there just to watch that.
Yeah, that awkward conversation.
Yeah, apparently they just didn't. He didn't have the chemistry
From what I read, he did. He did the read, the pre-reading, and all that stuff, and he was fine. And then when they filmed the first couple of scenes, it just didn't work for some reason. And then they brought in this kid.
Well, I think Michael J. Fox was always the first choice, but
I think scheduling, he couldn't do it.
Yeah, because he was doing Family Ties, and finally they're like, they begged the Family Ties people, and he's like, well, you can do it, but he's going to have to still do what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And So they filmed everything at night to accommodate Michael J. Fox's schedule.
Man, he was probably exhausted through that whole thing.
Oh, I would imagine so. Yeah. But, you know, he's Canadian, so he'd have been really polite about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he was super polite and just allowed it to happen. Oh, man. Well, we're at the 39-minute mark of this podcast,
This feels like a long one.
Actually, this is... It's not, because we recorded a whole bunch of crap before this. Okay, so we're probably only about a half an hour in. I'm going to actually have to edit this. But this is weird. So what else could we talk about if we feel like talking about stuff? Because this is our podcast. We do what we want.
Right?
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
Never do that again. Actually, no. Do that again.
Yeah, boy. And this is how Mike died.
No. Just caught me in the wrong way.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, so I mentioned earlier that I've probably seen this movie like 300 times. I watched this movie like every day when I got home from school for probably a good year.
It was just your thing.
Yeah. This was the year that I wasn't watching Top Gun every day when I came home from school. Because there was a year of that too. But I actually at one point wrote a trivia book about Back to the Future, like when I was like 15, maybe 14, 15 years old. I never did anything with it, obviously, but
you were the nerdiest of kids, weren't you?
I was. That I mean, I you know, like girls didn't like me and I didn't have any friends, but man,
nerd. I spent all my teenage years playing D&D.
I did that in sixth grade for a little while.
Yeah.
And
D&D and Magic the Gathering when that came out. That was my thing.
Yeah, I was an adult when Magic came out.
Well, there is an age difference between us. That is true.
How old are you?
I'm 40.
40. Okay, so I'm 48. So
yeah, so 8 years difference. I think I was in... Oh, goodness. I think, a freshman in high school when Magic first started coming out.
Yeah, I was married, having sex. I mean, Magic wasn't much of a thing for me then.
Neat, Greg. Neat.
No, in eighth grade, you would have been, what, 12? Yeah, I was 20. I got married 19 years old, so.
Wow. Yeah, no, I waited until I was, like, 31 to get married, so.
Much smarter than I am. Although, I'm still good friends with my first wife, so.
There you go.
She's an awesome lady.
Yeah.
So. Huh.
This might end up being a shorter podcast.
We're just
because we sort of run out of shit to talk about.
Sorry for all of you who are listening.
You know what? I'm not sorry. You're the ones that downloaded this shit. This is the best part, is we can say whatever we want, and then I'll just go back and edit it later.
I can tell stories about all the Back to the Future people I've met.
Do it!
So I've met... I think the first person I ever met was Claudia Wells, who I talked about earlier. She was sweet. Went to her shop in Studio City. Armani Wells, check it out. She'll probably sign something through the mail, although she charges, which is good because, you know, damn it, that's her signature and it takes time. And so, Claudia, if you're listening, we love you. She actually was really sweet when we were doing our charity Signing Away Hunger. She sent me a handful of things and that was really nice. James Tolkien, who played Principal Strickland, who was also in Top Gun as the captain of the ship, you know, the... You're going to fly rubber dog shit out of Hong Kong, guy. I met him at a convention. He was super nice. It's always interesting meeting people who are so totally different than their characters. Like, you know, in the movies, he's always this hard ass. And in life, he's super nice guy. I deeply regret that I wasn't getting my guitar signed back then, because I would have loved to have had him sign that. And I still hold out hope. Who else? I mean, Christopher Lloyd. So I've met Chris a couple of times, actually worked with him a couple of times. Super nice guy. He's very shy and quiet. Not aloof, just he's just very quiet in real life, which is funny compared to his larger than life characters he plays. And I've been watching him my entire life, you know, like my parents watch Taxi and I think he was one of my mom's favorite characters on that. And
I watched Prop Stories on Disney, and they had a thing about his costume from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah,
and he was talking to the host and looking at his old costume from the time. And he came across as just sort of a low-key, sort of quiet dude.
He is.
Yeah, and it just like that's probably what he's like in real life. And confirmation, he is like that in real life.
Got to meet Leah Thompson. She was really sweet. I had her sign my guitar. I wish I had more money that day because I would have loved for her to sign my Space Camp poster. I have Kelly Preston already signed that, but I didn't get Leah to sign that. Who else? Met Crispin Glovin at that movie thing. So Biff, Tom Wilson, didn't do anything Back to the Future for years. Like, he was real focused on his comedy career and, like, wouldn't talk about Back to the Future and wouldn't sign autographs Back to the Future. And now he's doing conventions, which is awesome. You know, I hope that it's a good source of revenue for him.
It probably is, yeah. It's probably why he came back to it. And also because he's sort of like somebody who was recently in politics. So
yeah.
His character was, not him.
So he, and I've seen him a couple of times. Nice fella. You know, I don't have any real stories about him, just nice fella. Of course, Michael J. Fox. I got to do a signing with him at Wizard World in Chicago. And I paid a stupid amount of money to be able to get him to sign my guitar, but it was...
probably worth it, because it's Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. Like, I mean, I'll be honest, I paid $500, and I did the... I got, like, you know, got to sit in, you know, towards the front for a thing that he was doing, a talk. I got to get a photo with him, and I got to have him sign my guitar. He didn't talk to anybody because, you know, when he was signing, you know, because of his Parkinson's, and I'm sure it just makes things difficult. But yeah. he was very gracious and very nice. And
it's cool. And you said you worked with Christopher Lloyd. What did you do with Christopher Lloyd?
So I've actually worked with him on two different occasions. Once, I didn't realize when I was a kid, they filmed the movie 8 Men Out in Indianapolis, and he was in that film. And so I got to be a part of that film, although he wasn't at the shooting location. I was that day, but so maybe saying I worked with him.
So sort of inadvertently worked with Christopher Lloyd.
But I did get to work with John Cusack and D.B. Sweeney and Charlie Sheen and David Strahm.
Strahm, yeah. I think Strahm.
And Mike Rooker. And so that was kind of cool.
Mary Poppins.
So I do work with a convention in Cincinnati called Horror Hound. And they brought in the cast of the Addams Family, and he played Uncle Fester. And so I built a replica of Pugsley's electric chair for them to do group photos with. And so people would come in and sit in the electric chair, and like the cast would surround. And so like, it was kind of cool. Like I got a photo with me and the cast, and he signed it. And
that's pretty cool. Yeah. So
funny other story about that. So when, also at the convention was Meatloaf, the singer from the 70s. And he saw the electric chair, and he's like, I want to do my photos in there. And I'm like, okay. And so we got him in this electric chair, which was kind of high. It was awesome. I love Meatloaf.
I know that you just called him Meatloaf, but of course his name is Robert Paulson.
Yeah, but he goes by Meatloaf.
But his name is Robert Paulson.
I don't think people call him Robert.
His name is Robert Paulson. It's Fight Club, man. It's a reference to Fight Club.
When I realized what you were actually saying, I was just too busy not being able to breathe.
Like, I'm taking this serious. No, Fight dipshit. Club,
yeah. I don't know what his real name is, but he goes by Meatloaf.
Yeah, I know him as Meatloaf and Robert Paulson, like the rest of the world does. Yeah. So, and there's that.
I was surprised. I was nervous about meeting Meatloaf because, why is that? Well, he's a raging Republican, and gotten to meet a couple of my heroes that have disappointed me, and I really didn't want him to disappoint me, and he didn't. He was a sweet guy. We didn't talk about politics, and he was just very nice and gracious. And
I have actually only met one of my heroes ever, and I'd always been told, don't meet your heroes, kind of thing. And I was at a convention down in Chattanooga 2 years ago, I believe, and it was a maker convention. And one of the guest speakers there was for the Nation of Makers, which I've been a part of for a couple of years now. And one of the speakers there, who's also one of the chairmen of it, was Adam Savage. And Adam just was walking around the convention. Now, they had an auction, a silent auction, that anybody could put stuff in to raise money for it. And I had, this was back when I had just started building replicas of the Mangalore grenade. And he's a huge fan of The Fifth Element. I am, you are. Everybody is that likes movies. I had put one into the auction. And some of the people from Tested knew about it and like called him over to where I was. And I got to talk to him about props for a good 20 minutes. And he is as nice in person as you would expect him to be from his persona on TV. He is just as chill as can be. And that was not disappointing at all.
That's awesome.
So Adam Savage is actually a cool person.
I would say the one that disappointed me the most was getting to meet Richard Petty. Like,
really?
I don't know. He'd been my hero since I was like, could talk. And then like, I don't know. He just didn't care about me. Like, just, I, you know, like
dismissed you a little bit.
Yeah, or, it was just like, I'm here to sign autographs. Go away.
Yeah, go away, kid. Yeah. You bother me.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, I was probably 40, but.
Yeah. It is what it is.
It is. And that's totally.
And you never know what's going on in their day.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and in retrospect, like, I realized, like, I think his wife was dealing with cancer. And
yeah, he probably had a lot on his plate. Yeah. So I tend to, like, when people are really ultimately dismissive of me, like, I try to step back and go, I don't know what's going on in your life today.
Right.
So I'm not going to hold this against you. But if they do it to me twice, fuck them.
Right.
So, yeah, that's how I look. I try to be forgiving of people. But so be it. What are you working on right now, Greg?
Well,
because we got to fill space.
So I'm working on my Han Solo and Carbonite. I've got my R2-D2. I'm working on this project for you that's in front of me, and you can talk about that if you want to.
We can't talk about that, actually. That's a secret.
And that's why I didn't tell you what it was. Nobody knows.
No, nobody knows, but it's a thing that's sitting here.
And
it's really cool that people will find out about it in a couple of weeks.
And my R2-D2. So
yeah, you've
got a lot of Star Wars stuff going on
right
now.
Yeah, you do. Because so. you have a full battle droid from the original from the prequels.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'll get to that at some point.
There's also, I believe, a K-9 half completed in your shop, and from Doctor Who, of course. And you like me have a pile of partially finished projects in your shop.
Well, the Han Solo and Carbonite, I really just started working on it last week in earnest, but I started that project back in 2000, I think, when I married my last ex-wife. Shut up. me and a couple of buddies got together, and we spent the evening building Han Solo and Carbonite.
Right.
And, like, we got it done probably at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning, and then we were, like, loaded it up in my minivan and took it over to another friend's house, and we painted it in his shop. Ran out of spray paint. Ran to Walmart at like 2 a.m, painted, you know, finished it, brought it home, made a French cleat for it, hung it on the wall, and my soon-to-be wife walks in the living room and it's hanging in the dining room.
Like just all of a sudden there it is.
Yeah, and she's like, what the fuck? And I'm like, this is my bachelor party. She's like, you should have gone for strippers.
Yeah.
And so, but when I built it, like, I think I had a table saw and a jigsaw, and that's all I had to cut anything. And
it kind of showed, didn't it, from like 20 years ago to today,
with
the skills you've gained and the tools you have access to.
Yeah, now. Yeah. So I'm rebuilding the main cabinet, and I'll take the Han Solo part and graft that out and put it into the new one.
Now, does your Han Solo part, the actual frozen Han Solo, does that have any direct ties back to anything?
So it is a casting off an Elusive Concepts one. Mm-h 20 years ago, Elusive Concepts made full-size replicas of these. And my understanding is that it was cast off of the screen-used one. So
it has some lineage, at least.
Although last night I was talking to my buddies, and you know they pointed out, you know, like the webbing on the hands where it comes out is really thick because of they needed to make draft lines for the molding and stuff. So So I'm gonna have to grind all that out
and clean him up a little bit.
Up a little.
Yeah,
because I don't, you know, this is like gonna be my ultimate one when it's all.
Oh yeah, it'll be like a proper almost hero.
Yeah.
I mean, did they even make more? I imagine they did make more than one of those props, or did they just have the one for filming?
I think they just had the one.
Yeah. And I know they switched panels on it back and forth because only a few lit up, wasn't it?
There's two that light up. And there's a one hero one at the upper right-hand corner that you see always lighting up and blinking. And in one scene in Empire, they take that and put it on the other side because that's where the camera was. Mm-hmm. So when you go...
So when it's when he's floating, that's when they switch it around, when they're moving him to Slave One to take him to Tatooine.
Yeah.
All of this information about Star Wars props brought to you during the Back to the Future episode of Prop History Podcast.
That's all right.
That's right.
We promised we were going to ramble.
But and we're making good on that promise. Would you like to know what I'm working on right now?
Yeah, yeah.
And so would everyone else at home.
Yes.
I have recently started work on a movie.
Yeah, tell me about this.
So it is a sci-fi film, short film, that I'm making really just to show off special effects work and model work and whatnot. And I'm building a bunch of space suits from found parts and all of the filming models and the sets for this, along with all the hand props, with a whole bunch of callbacks to old sci-fi and stuff that's inspired me to be involved in this.
Does this have a name yet?
It does not have a name yet. It has some storyboards and it has some props that have been made and the beginnings of some of the models, but it's in the works right now.
There you go.
And the secret project that we kind of touched on a little bit ago is touching. He's touching it right now. That's the sound of it rattling around. You can hear.
Can you guess what it is?
By that sound, can you guess? Well, in a few weeks, I'll be releasing an extremely limited number of these for sale. It is actually from Starship Troopers. If you recall, that was the first episode that we ever did. The Merida rifles, there were versions of it that had a very large scope on it. The sniper variant, or DMR, designated marksman rifle, whatever you want to call it. But I was contacted by an owner of one of the few remaining originals to make a casting of it, to make a mold of the original and make some castings of it, because he wanted copies for other rifles that he owns. He has an extensive Starship Troopers collection. But these scopes are extremely rare. Only a few still exist. And I will be releasing copies of that for sale, only a very, very limited run, because that is the agreement that I made with the original owner. So that's just how that works out. But that and R4I9, I've been printing all the parts for my own astromech droid, Mangalore rifles, the trackers from Alien, bunch of stuff from Firefly. I have all the parts now for the Lassiter from Firefly. Oh, nice. So I'll be building one of those. And then from original parts, too.
Very cool.
No less. An old flashlight and a toy gun from the 60s. That's what they made it from.
Nice.
And that's what I've got going on, besides some cosplay stuff and a whole bunch of Star Wars nonsense.
Now, I'll pause so you can edit this part out if you want. But on the scope now, are you going to offer castings like directly out of the mold castings and then a cleaned up version?
It actually will be only the cleaned up version, because there are issues with the original that I think some people probably would not want.
Gotcha.
Just simply because it's showing its age. Yeah. You saw it while shop. It is showing its age, and it needs cleanup. It just does, out of the mold. But
did you get to send one of these to him?
I have another one that I'm cleaning up that I've sent off to him. And then the final, we're going to do a different version of it, a version of it that's almost a hero. Because the actual hero that was used in Starship Troopers of this scope was actually just a casting.
Yeah.
They made a fiberglass casting that they used as a hero. And there's only two of those heroes left that I'm aware of. And they were made off of an existing night vision scope and the scope cone from one of the first night vision scopes ever made that was used on the M3 carbine right after World War II. So they're a pretty simple build of real parts. There's not really a whole lot added to them. But the casting that I have comes from a prop that had some age issues that need to be fixed, but we'll have a hero version of it that will be a perfect version,
nice,
if you will. So yeah, that's what I got going on.
Terribly excited about this.
I'm very excited to have it done, and to have, of course, a copy of it for myself and the few other copies that will be available.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I got going on.
Very cool.
Yeah. We have now reached 58 minutes. I believe we probably have enough crap to throw out online so people can listen to us ramble on about bullshit.
So, sorry that you have to do all this editing.
No, it's all right. There's a lot of editing that's got to be done. Thank you for listening. This has been the Prop History Podcast. My name is Mike.
I'm Greg.
And we will catch you on the next episode.
See you on the flip side.
Cheers.